Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
And I am...
See you later.
Hello, and much like the series we're covering today, welcome back to MCU Later here at Post Wrestling. For you, this week, you see it on the chest. You see it in the background. I think my wife stole my shirt. I am Rich Fan. The chest you see is the chest, if you're watching on YouTube, of WH Park. WH, how does it feel to be back? Welcome back.
Listen, you know what I got to say? Because this is a free episode. I got to say, you fucking freeloaders, stop freeloading, okay? Stop squatting in my backyard. You know what the fuck I'm saying? Get over to the Post Wrestling Cafe. Get to that Patreon, patreon.com/postwrestling, and sign up. What are the rates again, Rich Fan?
Listen, two cups, two sugars. You can go double-double. You can go so many places with Post Wrestling. And so I'm going to bring them up because I didn't have them up while I was ready there on Patreon. So I'm going to bring them up now while we're talking.
This is why waiting always sets the audio loop trap for you.
That's why he sets me up, because I wasn't ready. He's like, right. Listen, if you're not going to be ready, don't stay ready. So if you're thinking about it, one milk, one sugar, $6 a month, double-double, $12 a month. And if you're feeling frisky, espresso for $50 a month. End right. of the day, $6 a month minimum. You get MCU Later. You get that's Rewind right. to SmackDown. You yeah. get Rewind Away. You fuck get my yeah. favorite show, Pollock and Ting Talk.
That's right.
And what else do you get?
You mean your second favorite show, because your favorite show is this show, MCU Later.
Oh, see, I was going to say post-ProRes whenever it's you and
Kim. That's free. That's
I mean,
free.
It's so awesome. I
Long and Winding Road Road, it's fucking free too. Like, so I don't go on rants on those ones. But this one, you normally have to pay for, but we're giving it to the freeloaders for free. But if you want to hear more about the fucking X-Men from 1997, you have to fucking pay for this shit. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. And one of the things you also have to keep in mind is when you're watching us and you're asking our opinions and you get our opinions, you're going to be paying. So if you see me on the Twitter streets and you're like, Rich, what'd you think of X-Men 97? I'm going to say, find out on Thursday on MCU Later.
Listen, Rich Fan is like the fucking Kazuchika Okada of professional wrestling journalism / podcasting. Okay. And then like Wade Keller and John Pollock and Wade Ng are like, the like combined, they're like fucking Tony Khan, okay? They gotta pay this man, all right? So that means you gotta pay. This shit ain't free. So all you people like asking for free shit, no. Listen, Wei Ting, John Pollock, Wade Keller, they gotta keep the lights on. And to do that, they need to be getting your patronage. So stop freeloading, okay?
They'll get it.
And stop asking it. Rich Fan. Stop asking the Rainmaker Rich Fan about these fucking free things that he's not going to get to you.
These okay? tanks don't come free, except for this week. And so you even see, if you notice, for those of you who've been watching on YouTube, usually our logos are even a little different. I figured with us going to X-Men 97, we change it up a little bit, give it a little thought bubble, a little sassiness going here. So tonight, or whenever this enters your ear holes, we're going to talk about Marvel's return by way of the X-Men with X-Men 97. We're going to have a little mini Dune review. We're going to have, of course, our forums at postwrestling.com reactions to X-Men 97. Of course, as always, WH's thoughts and his recommendations for comics that you might want to read related to the two episodes we saw today. But before that, right. we have to jump into the MC news. And so, the MCUs this week, between the time of our last chat, there's been a bit of chatter about not only the proxy war occurring in the Marvel proper by way of Disney, but questions about the X-Men and being used basically as a cudgel to slander Marvel, because the idea is, will the X-Men save us from superhero fatigue? And to me, I don't know if they realize this, WH, especially some of these folks in Deadline and all these other places writing articles. Superhero fatigue started with the X-Men. And then one person in particular, I'm talking about Logan. If you grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, people were sick of him because he was the coolest character, but he was everywhere. He was in the X-Men. He was in the Avengers. I have the comics in my bedroom. He was in the Fantastic Four for a little bit. That new Fantastic Four, that was hit pretty good. Him, Spider-Man.
No, I hated that.
Hulk. And I hated Thing.
The only good thing about that was the art by Art Adams, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I accepted it for it being a little too OP.
Too OP, you know what I'm saying?
OP, just Wolverine was everywhere.
And it's just marketing. Oh, new Ghost Rider, Danny Ketch is super popular. Let's stick him in this new Fantastic Four. It doesn't make any sense. Mr. Fix-It, Joe Gray Hulk. Let's put him in this new Fantastic Four. There's no women. That's what bothered me. I was like, what the fuck? It's all dudes. That's bullshit.
And that's why a lot of the dude bros liked it. I liked it because Danny Ketch was my guy back then. If you met Rich Fan in the 90s, all Danny Ketch all the time.
Did you swing a chain like Danny Ketch?
And give him people down with Danny.
Let me tell you something, folks. If you keep bothering him, not only is he the rainmaker, Rich Fan, but also he's got the penance stare of fucking Ghost Rider. He'll tear your soul asunder.
I'll make you remember all the bad takes you've ever had in your life. And
you mean like your boy Rover?
Thought were good.
You mean like your boy Rover?
Oh, listen. Okay. I didn't think we were going to go here with this. Listen. I'm going to go full wrestling journalist. That's with the Z, like the news guy. Sources close to Rich Fan tell me that he tried to out Rovert by way of his like real name and job. And Rovert didn't bite because he knew the other person knew. And it just got weird on Twitter for about a minute because he just stopped doing his quote tweet thing with me. Because I was like, yeah, I know who you are. It's not that hard, Bruce Wayne. I'm like Bane. This is for you, Jermaine. I jumped to DC just for a minute.
That's right.
There's only so many 6'2 guys who can bench press a truck walking around Gotham City. Surprise, surprise, it was Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, Bane's so like people. 7 feet tall.
There's only so many people in Ireland who have enough time to be on a computer and stay on a computer all day. Hint, hint. Wink, wink.
That's right.
I got you.
Don't mess with my man, the Rainmaker, Rich Fan. Listen, we manifested the Empress. Maybe we're going to manifest the Rainmaker.
Listen, I got to get coins to randomly drop. You know that's the one thing I'm very annoyed that the Young Bucks came up with as an idea for Okada. The whole like flip a coin and it lands and it kicks off his theme song. I'm like, he's a heel. Save that for when he's a face.
They're stupid. Those two. They are. They're really stupid. Yeah. They just want to be cool. You know what I mean? They don't want to be heels. Yeah. They want to be cool. You know, I don't know how you can be cool wearing like fucking vests and like sneakers as part of your wrestling gear. Cause that's lame. That's really dumb. But anyways, the proxy war.
Let's talk about the proxy war. Yeah, let's not do our war with the Bucks and Rovert. Let's talk about the proxy war. So right now, that's led to a lot of bad press. The one thing you have to realize, for those of you, especially not new to MCU later, but maybe new to Marvel proper, the X-Men are the A-team. They have been the first off the bench from their existence. You fast forward, they had to sell the rights to Fox because they were hemorrhaging money. The Avengers, Iron Man, all that stuff. Those guys were C, D level guys. And that's no disrespect. That's just, it's kind of like when you talk about pro wrestling and people are lionizing like, man, you know, people really didn't give the Road Dogg his flowers in the 90s. What? Like, that's what we're doing right now by like, oh, Marvel doesn't deserve to have the X-Men because they're you know, superhero fatigue is here. It's like, no. X-Men blue, X-Men gold. That was fatigue. You had so many freaking X-Men that you could legitimately make full squads. And then X-Factor, X-Force, Generation X. That's just right off the rip.
District X. Cat House X.
New Mutants.
I'm pretty sure they did Cat House X in the Joe Casey run.
Yeah, it was everywhere. You couldn't throw a cat and not hit an X-Men. Don't throw cats, folks. Don't throw cats.
No. I'm sorry. I like cats. I'm a dog person morally, but I like
that. You couldn't throw Roverts without hitting an X-Men.
Whoa. Hit an X-Men.
inappropriate. I know. We're going too far. Going too far. We're free, and we are freeing ourselves.
I doubt he's listening, because I think he just sticks to wrestling. I don't think he ventures into, like, the pop culture stuff.
Well, if he ever did, it would just be like the techno-organic virus and get ruined. Man, I'm just letting it all out.
It's not the Phalanx Covenant, it's the Rover Covenant. You know what? I shouldn't say anything. He's always been nice to me. I've never had an issue with him.
See?
He makes me laugh. His battles with people on Twitter make me laugh.
I don't like the people that, like, jump on it and then they are like the brood where it's just like, rah, 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 and it just makes things worse. And so we're in a very audio medium. We're bringing some video visuals. So I apologize. We're gonna bring it back. So as you hear, and when we talk about the X-Men and X-Men 97 over these next few weeks. And then we'll eventually, as a plan of attack, we're going to cover the movies. And when we cover the movies, we're going to deal with that. And I don't think WH has told me officially when we're going to have the episode where I have a mental breakdown, because there are in the movie series, there are two. I don't particularly. I mean,
I don't think we're doing all of them. Like,
yeah, we're going to do the Bryan Singer movies. We're going to do First Class.
Yes.
And then we're going to do kind of all three
Wolverines.
All three Wolverines. All three Deadpools.
Oh, sorry. Like, yes.
Yeah, all, so we're going to do the first two Deadpools. And then the third us doing the review of
Wolverine. Deadpool Wolverine.
Yeah.
The official title.
And so my hope is, and I had mentioned this to you, I got to figure out, when does Deadpool come out again? I have it
July.
In my notes.
July. It's in July.
Yeah, it's July, because I don't want to get divorced. 3rd of July. Oh, no. When does it come out? Because
I want to make sure. You won't get divorced. I'll talk to your wife for you.
All right, so it's July 26th. Here's the thing I want to try to commit to, as long as work and football won't take me away from it. I want to come up to Toronto and watch it, and we do a review.
Listen, we might be able to get either Wei Ting's backyard or John Pollock's backyard open for a Rich Fan visit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because I had gotten a new job last year. It'll be almost a year at that point. It was like right before I was going to go. It's like, oh, hey, I got this new job, so now I can't go. So then we'll be able to actually, you all will be able to hear us, see us together, review a Deadpool.
We should just podcast from one of their backyards. I'm going to pitch that to them. I pitch that to them. And they'll be like, then Wei will just like go on about like the technical difficulties of doing that.
Well, we just have to have a digital recorder. I've done it before when I was on site for New Orleans for WrestleMania, but when I did it for the Torch. And that's actually, as a side note, you can find me at the Pro Wrestling Torch if you didn't know that. You'll figure it out. It's fine.
That's right. Wei Killer wants you to sign up for that shit too.
Yeah.
Because he's like Tony Khan too. Got to pay this man.
PWTorch.com/goVIP. Speaking of paying. We're going to take a little break from the MC news to talk to you guys about a really cool product that has entered our lives. And I think you all should have it into your lives as well. And that's Chopped Tees. Chopped Tees is not only a great brand because of the fact that they guarantee that their shipping and what they do with that shipping is pretty cool. So here's the deal. If you order from Chopped Tees, when you order, the order is filled by one of their affiliates close to you. So that way, when it gets shipped, it's coming to you, not just from a rando place. It's going to arrive quicker than anything else typically would.
That's right.
And so for us, the one thing I love about Chopped Tees is, one, the quality. Take a look at what WH is wearing for those of you watching on YouTube. Second, I'm right on it. Like, in terms of folks, if you're buying stuff from Chopped Tees, I buy it myself. One of the ones I recommend is, first of all, Poison Rana comes out with a really good one. And in a moment, I'm going to share with you, if you're a member of Post Wrestling and the MCU Later universe, and you haven't picked up this shirt, I'm sad to report, if you go to their wonderful website over at Chopped Tees, I'm talking about the Empress Karen Peterson limited edition orchid hoodie.
That's right.
If you didn't pick it up, folks, I'm going full Home Shopping Network. If you didn't pick it up before, it's gone.
It's gone.
Sorry to say
it. Can't get that color anymore. You know why? Because this color's hard to do.
It is.
The man, Richard Avian, told me himself, this color is hard to do.
And it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. So if you go to chop-tees.com, you could go and check out all of our collections, whether it's the pillars as part of the Long and Winding Royal Road collection, our MCU later stuff, the base post-wrestling. If you want to look at the Nubian Wrestling Advocates, get my man Nate, Dr. Chris, the youngest in charge, some love. If you wanted to go take a look, like I said, Poison Rana, love me a good Poison Rana shirt. And if you want to see some of the other brands they have there, take a look. And so, again, if you go to choppedtees.com, chopped-tees.com, you can pick up all these wonderful things. Personally, one of my favorites, which I will probably pick up before WrestleMania, is the Five Pillars sweatshirt. I think that's a pretty sweet looking deal there, if I do say so myself.
Just so you know, I think if you're signed in, Rich, that's your price, by the way. You know, that's not the average person's price, but the average person's price might be a little higher because you're paying, the shipping is included.
And so if you have any questions, you can always hit up myself, you can hit up WH, or you can hit up the fine folks at choppedtees.com.
That's right.
But make sure go to type.
He's very active. He's very active on the social media, Instagram.
Mr. Avian?
Twitter, Slash, X, Twitter, what the fuck that Elon Musk dumb fuck is calling it these days.
Musk Vision? Oh, yeah, I wasn't logged in, so that was the actual price.
All right, that's the actual price.
Yeah, streets were talking. And so one of the things I want to make sure before we get out of here with the job tees, I want to make sure I highlight too, the hat. I love the beanie, the post-pom-pom beanie. Trey actually got one of those, or he's getting one of those. And it's very funny to see, like, folks ask what the question is. Like, does your family member have – do they work for the mail? It's like, yeah, the wrestling mail. Deal with it. Brap, brap. So
I would have said something ruder, but that's okay. Yeah, that's why you're there. That's why you're there, Rich, not me, because I would be getting some brap come my way with some of my answers. But anyways.
Yeah. So I would say this is a good way to transition over to, since you're getting the full Rich and WH treatment here, Dune. Dune 2 came out a few weeks ago. Both of us saw it. WH, what did you think?
I've seen it 3 times.
Well, hopefully that means you liked it.
Oh, I did. I've seen it in IMAX twice. I saw it in 70 millimeter once. I'm planning a fourth screening in 70 millimeter true IMAX because there's one near my house. So I saw Oppenheimer that way, the way Christopher Nolan meant for you to see it. I should go see this the way Denis Villeneuve wants us to see it, which is in true 70 millimeter IMAX. So I'm looking forward to going to, maybe Monday, I'm going to go to my local that has, I'm lucky, it's near me. I'm going to go. Watch it for a fourth time. Yes, I loved it. I think if you watch 1 and 2 together, which I hope to do in the theaters again, that it's one movie. It's not a faithful adaptation because there's a lot of changes in part 2, especially from the books. But I think it gets the spirit of what the author Frank Herbert wanted to talk about, which is a cautionary tale against leaders who instill fanaticism in their followers, messianistic figures who use religion and faith to weaponize people against who are their enemies or who they perceive to be their enemies. That's what he gets through very, very, very well. I think I was talking to a friend who lives in Japan, and I thought he was going to love this movie. He did not, but he said they made too many changes from the books. He thought the choices that were made were weird for him, which is fine. I understand that. Like I think he liked the TV miniseries more than these films, which is fair. You know, like I have not seen that thing in a long time. I don't recall loving it. I do still love the 1984 David Lynch version for all its flaws, and it's a very flawed adaptation. But Yeah, no, this is also like the thing I really loved about these two films together is that they just showcase the cinematic expertise of Denis Villeneuve and everyone that works with him, all the great cast, Greg Fraser, his cinematographer, Hans Zimmer providing the wonderful music that accompanies the imagery that we see in these films. And yeah, and I just think Timothy Chalamet, what a fucking powerhouse performance this guy has brought to the character of Paul Atreides. And yeah, I loved him. I can't wait for part three. And there's going to be a part three for sure.
Well, he's already said that he would do a part three if he felt like he could do better than part two. But if he can't, he won't. Which is a very Villeneuve thing.
I think he's already got it mapped in his mind that he just needs this. He just needed this to be successful for like Legendary and Warner Brothers to greenlight it, which they're going to because it's making them so much money. And so we're going to get Dune Messiah in film form.
And for those of you prior to our start of our show today, WH just had to be spend no money, actually, thanks to Audible picking up the entirety of the series to listen. And I'll probably be done some point by October.
We can listen to some of it when I come over to, you know, when I come to your house and we're in Pittsburgh and then we're driving to Philly. You know, we're going to hit some bookstores because I want to see what kind of editions I can find in both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and do some comic book shopping. This is less of a wrestling trip. I might be WrestleMania week, but it's more like WH going buck crazy.
Yeah. Young buck crazy?
No. Hell no. Huh? Those two guys are fools. What can I tell you? I might, you know, I have a very, you know, strong opinion about Ken Chan, but I don't hate that guy, you know. Young Bucks, I hate. I think they're terrible. I think they're overrated. I think they're terrible. But anyways, that's neither here nor there.
I love how Dune, the Bucks are the mind killer for you right now. You have to.
No, they're voice. You know who they are? They're the little fucking rubber spiders on Giddy Prime in the first film. That's what they are. They're those little fucking human spider monstrosities.
Ugh. Need that in my life anymore, but I did need Dune. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was magnificent. The images, it definitely is going to get nominated for a lot of awards. I think that the cast is perfect. I talked with Wade over at the Torch about the fact that this movie cemented to me that Dave Bautista cannot be touched by any pro wrestler that ever dares to act.
No,
because I've never seen a man that big be laid so small. And it's all through his acting and not through like CGI or anything like that. That man is awesome.
He's committed to being an actor, which was what I respect the most about him. He doesn't want to be in blockbusters, right? Like Vin Diesel could come call and knock it. Hey, you want to be in Fast 11? He'll be like, read this. No, thanks. I'm going to be in this indie film. That's way more interesting. And I'm going to take like the bit role in that. You're going to like, unless he really wants some boat money. Sure, you know, but he's not like, and I respect John Cena, his foray into Hollywood, but
yeah,
he's no Dave Bautista. Very few people who can be on the level of Dave Bautista as far as like the choices he's made as an actor and his willingness not to try to be a star, but he wants to be an actor.
I like the fact that I mentioned this with Wade. Cena will make roles and pick roles that are very vulnerable. Like a lot of times he'll physically put himself in danger or he'll be in positions where like he's naked and like he's very vulnerable. He's not looking like, look at this man. He's like kind of like shrinking into himself. Look at what's going on with Peacemaker. That character and that portrayal is very pathetic. Like he's the hero, but he's not really. He's a sad, sad human being. I just saw his new movie, Ricky Stanicky, that's on Amazon. And again, he's playing a loser that has no respect for himself. And these guys try to use him as, you know, the name of an invisible friend they would make whenever they would get in trouble. And he kind of just keeps running with it. He's basically a muscle-bound Alan from The Hangover. And he's fine with that in a lot of these movies. Batista is whatever he needs to be in every movie.
Right.
And he's found with Villeneuve, a person, an auteur that can create pictures for him. And every movie he's been in with him, whether it's the Blade Runner series or Blade Runner, he is not the monster. He is a sad figure that you have, despite his size, the utmost sympathy for. Like him opening Blade Runner, that was just like, man, I still think about that. It haunts me. And that's because of his acting. And so we're going to transition from that to cartoons that keep our hearts glad, or at least my heart glad, because we're going to start with this. WH, why don't you share with our audience what you shared with me? I'll be gentle because we're going to the 90s, and so Cherry Poppin' Daddies and all Zoot Suit Riot, all that fun stuff were happening.
So, you know, like you asked me, you know, like what's, you know, basically like what I think about this compared to the original run of these cartoons. And I told you, like, I've never watched the original cartoons. X-Men cartoons from the 90s were never part of my childhood or my like college years, so to speak. I think that would be around the time I was still in university, my young adult life. I never felt the need to watch it because I didn't like the animation style of the time. Because I was actually then getting to Japanese animation. I'm like, come on, the fuck? You're going to compare this shit to like Gundam and fucking like Akira and fucking Ghost in the Shell? Get the fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying? So also, like you said before earlier in this episode, I had X-Men fatigue. I was so fucking sick of these guys. Like, I don't fucking want to see fucking Wolverine. I don't want to fucking see Jubilee. I certainly don't want to see fucking Rogue and Gambit and their messed up love triangle shit. I got enough of that in the comics. I didn't need to devote time to an animated show that I had to go out of my way to watch in some respects. No, it just wasn't something that was going to happen. But hey, you know, I do this show. It's they revived this cartoon, much to the light of yourself, much to the light of Wei, much to the light of a future guest, maybe even as close as next week, Rich. We're going to have John Cena probably on this show. So much to the delight of John Cena, they announced this cartoon was coming back. They got the original creator back, who has now since been fired because he's been revealed to be kind of problematic.
Yes.
That. And
that's why he wasn't in the MC news. I was like, y'all can look that one up.
You can look that up. We're not going to talk about him, but he just suffice to say, probably they were justified in maybe parting ways with this fellow. But yeah, so this is like really my kind of like me like entering virgin territory of watching the X-Men cartoons. And so like I watched both episodes this morning after I finished watching the last three episodes of The Bad Batch, which have been very good, by the way. You know,
haven't watched yet. That's my
weekend. It's good. What, the entire season three so far? Or yeah, it's good. I think this is the best season so far. And like, it's not so much mission of the week. It's very focused on the main storyline. So yeah, but we're not talking about Star Wars. We're talking about X-Men. But you know, for me, it's like, okay, let's turn this on. The opening credits. I am familiar with the song, the opening theme. Great. Okay, we see the intro of each character, what they do, and so forth. And that's also in the end credits as well. Cyclops fires concussive force blasts. By the way, his Cyclops' optic blasts do not generate any fucking energy or power. They are a concussive force. It's like being hit with a really hard gust of wind, but like super strong, right? But
we're gonna get to that.
But this is the Jim Lee era of costumes. Right, these are the costumes. Cyclops' costume comes from the relaunch of X-Men #1 with, you know, written by Chris Claremont, the longtime writer, but drawn, designed by Jim Lee. Storm's costume, designed by Jim Lee. Jean Grey's costume, Sans, before she's pregnant, Jim Lee. Gambit, created by, designed by Jim. I think Gambit was designed by Jim Lee. I'm pretty sure he was. Jubilee, all these characters. Like, this is like the, basically, Bishop, Wilshie Portacio, actually, throughout drew his first appearance. But these are basically the Homage Studios, the guys who formed Homage Studios later with Image Comics. This is the design, particularly Jim Lee. And then on the right, on my left here, is Morph, who originally in the 60s was a character called the Changeling, just became a forgotten character, brought back into the anime series, and then jumped into the, not Morph, but jumped into the regular comics, and most prominently was a member of the X-Men during the Age of Apocalypse storyline, which is probably my recommendation today, along with like a series called Exiles that I really liked, written by Judd Winnick, and I think initially drawn by Mike McCone. Fun series. I really like that series. Imagine like the X-Men as Doctor Who, essentially, jumping into different timelines and multiverses and the such. But and the Blackbird from this is not the, you know, Lockheed XR-71 design. It is the Jim Lee design of the Blackbird, which I have a, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about. I do like some classic, you know, SR-71 Blackbird, you know, Lockheed Blackbird, which is where, you know, the name of Kitty's Dragon comes from, is the real life aeronautics company that designed the original, you know, Blackbird jet that the X-Men use, and they're to travel around to fight you know, injustice against the mutant people, the mutant kind, the mutant race, and the such. But yeah, so it's cool, like, you know, nice little recap of things that happened before with, you know, they do fight a lot of the Sentinels. You see the Master Mold. You see Bolivar Trask, the person who created the Sentinels. Didn't look like Peter Dinklage, but, you know, I was, you know, a little disappointed about that. But
And just to give you a quick flavor, just because as a person that watched it when it happened, a couple of things. Morph, to me, especially in the comics, became like, if you think in DC, what happened with Harley Quinn, where Harley really entered the comic by way of the cartoon. When Morph made that move in the Age of Apocalypse, it was a direct result of like the reaction to what happened to him in the first series of X-Men. He was basically the Christ figure for the series. I think it was the first episode he dies. And the rest of the first season, Wolverine is both angry at Cyclops for leaving Morph behind and super protective of new member Jubilation Lee. As you know, welcome. They stole the famous "Welcome to the X-Men Jubilee. Hope you survive the experience," because she didn't want to join. She comes to the doorstep. She's showing positive signs of being a mutant. She runs away, goes to a mall. All of a sudden, the Sentinels show up to the mall. X-Men have to save her. Boom. So you jump to now, you know, almost nearly 40 years to the dot years later. You look, or 30 years later. And you have Jubilee as one of the elder statesmen in To Be My X-Men, dealing with one of my favorite. Again, you talked about X-Men fatigue. This is probably for you at the height of your X-Men fatigue, when they introduced this gentleman, Mr. DaCosta. What did you think of his introduction and how they handled the main overarching, could he be a new member? Is he a new member going on with him in this episode?
So you're talking about Roberto DaCosta, a.k.a. the New Mutant called Sunspot. When I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, I guess they've never done the New Mutants then in these shows.
Nope.
So Roberto DaCosta was a character created in the 80s. He was a member of a new class of X-Men after Charles Xavier thought the original X-Men had died, fighting, I think, the Brood in space. And so he decided, I'm just going to be a teacher. I'm not going to train these children to be superheroes or to
new
fight. Then so there's called the New Mutants. And so there's Sunspot, there's Sam Guthrie, Cannonball, There's Ray Sinclair. Talk about the fact
that he's an external. See, I'm going to turn into like almost.
That doesn't exist. Come on.
Listen.
That's been excellent.
See this face right here? The amount. My wife will take me to a dinner party when you come to visit.
Listen, if you're gonna pedestal Rob Liefeld concepts, I think we need to just end this relationship right now, my friend.
Listen. When you meet Melissa in person and you see the look on her face when I say this sentence, you'll know it's not an act. I cannot remember people she'll introduce me to like that I should know for years that are like friends of hers at dinner parties and stuff. But I will tell you exactly what happened with the externals. Who's an external? I can tell you every Omega level mutant, which you get to learn during this episode why one of the X-Men is, to me, one of the most important Omega level mutants. And the young lady in my right, your left, or your left, my right. And
Who? Jubilee?
No, Storm.
Storm, yeah. Of course, Storm's an Omega like level mutant.
And then for your knowledge, the voice actress also mentioned this. In the 90s, Storm's character was drawn akin to Halle Berry, lighter tone, despite in the comics having been darker skin. The voice actress herself is of darker skin. When Kevin Feige, and this, we'll come back to the actual episodes, because really the two episodes, they have overarching themes. When Feige decided to bring back X-Men 97, he had three rules. We got to be able to bring back the music. We got to be able to bring back the voice actors. And we're going to have to be able to tell the same stories, but now.
Right.
One of the big things the animators did was they didn't use CGI. They hand drew most of everything you see. And they made her darker and reflected her comic book character pigmentation. So she doesn't look like she had a tan like she did in the 90s. You know who was in charge of that stuff in the 90s, WH?
No, who was? Who was in charge? I'm sure I won't be surprised when you say the name.
Mr. Perlmutter.
Oh, Ron Perlmutter. Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy for so many reasons. But
so you see this team.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring up a picture for those of you watching on YouTube. X-Men in the 90s treated the X-Men in a way that we complain AEW doesn't treat some of their new wrestlers. So you see the photo in the back, which I will say as an aside, I am an unabashed, as you all can hear, X-Men lover. So even when X-Men fatigue was in, I still had the X-Men gold and blue comics. I still was buying. The Executioner's Song was the first long form 19 issue crossover event I ever bought with my own money. The original X-Men you see in that poster, my uncle had as a poster framed in my grandmother's house. So even when he moved out, he didn't trust some of the apartments he would live in. And he just kept it with my grandma because he knew she would keep it right. And so anytime I slept over, it was right outside my grandma's door. There was like a wall where she had a piano. And I would look up and I would see the X-Men. And it was like they were family members. It'd be like a picture of me from like, you know, like third grade, and then the X-Men. So
in that picture, we have three Omega level mutants. I can name the three. We do have, okay, Charles Xavier is an Omega level mutant because of the depth of his telepathic powers. Jean Grey, not only her telepathy, but also her telekinetic powers. And the third one's
my favorite.
The third one is Iceman. You think Iceman's an Omega level mutant? Yes, he can fucking turn the air into ice. He controls thermodynamic energy. Storm is a mega level mutant. The Magneto is an Omega level mutant. Apocalypse is an Omega level mutant. Drawing a blank now, like on some of them. I think
one of my favorites.
Legion is Legion considered
Holler.
David Holler, Professor X's son, is a Omega level mutant. Is Sunfire an Omega level mutant? He should be if he's not. Should be considered one.
He is not. Now we're missing a couple. So let's stay in the back. Because some of these are like, okay. So we have the third Braddock brother, Jamie Braddock.
Jamie Braddock, yeah.
Yeah, reality manipulation, definitely. Just like Kevin McTaggart, Proteus. That's not good. Anytime you have the ability to change reality, kind of let's not have that power, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nathan Summers.
Oh, who we saw in episode 2?
Yeah. Right,
Cable. Cable. Yep. Yeah.
Or as I like to call him again, Nathan Dayspring Ascani's son.
That's right.
I'm that guy. I'm that guy.
His real name.
Then you also have Benet Dupari, Exodus. But that's from the Krakoan age. And same thing with Quentin Quire, Kid Omega.
That's and, from the Morrison, yeah, run, yeah.
Hope Summers, Gabriel Summers, Vulcan and Hope. And last but certainly not least, and this is where I think you'll be excited, Franklin Richards.
Mm-hmm. Who also, for a short time, could bend reality.
Yep.
That was like very undefined, but he was a mutant. So if, for those that know, Franklin Richards is the son of Reed and Susan Storm Richards. And he was born a mutant, which I thought was a great tie into, like, you know, the Fantastic Four has ties to the X-Men. Isn't Wanda considered an Omega level mutant?
Okay. Oh, we're doing this. Oh, we're doing this. Okay. Here's the deal. Wanda is a direct result of powers constructed by the High Evolutionary. And so Wanda is not a mutant.
Fuck that. She's a mutant.
Wait. It gets better. It gets better. So Wanda's not a mutant. Pietro's not a mutant.
Fuck that.
Over the last 30 years, they both have and have not been the children of Magneto. Most recently, they have been accepted as his children. In fact, the trial of Magneto, which happened during the Krakoan Age, there was something that was discovered because of, again, this is going deep in the Mercury, folks. Deal with it. Because of the events of M-Day, can you want to let the folks know what M-Day was, WH?
So it's when Wanda Maximoff said at the end of House of M, the House of M storyline, she said, in her grief of losing her kids, she said...
Oh, you're already giving excuses. Just say what happened.
She said, no more mutants. And she decimated like 98% of the mutant population. She took away all their powers. So she became the most hated person among mutants for like the longest time, rightfully so. So yes, that's what M-Day was. So, okay. Yeah. So now she's back into being accepted as a mutant.
So, nope, she's still not a mutant.
This is bullshit. Like, this is, you know, so people don't know, this is a result of like Marvel Studios wants to use Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch in the Avengers movies, but they're technically considered mutants. So mutants are the domain of Fox. So in the comics, they said they're not fucking mutants anymore. So this is all this bullshit. So like Kevin could go like and greenlight them to be an X-Men in Avengers without having to deal with. But that's why you still have like Quicksilver, a version of Quicksilver in X-Men First Class. You sort of have Scarlet Witch sort of in there. Wanda, not Scarlet Witch, but a really young version of Wanda that doesn't do anything. But this is like where it gets murky, right? This is where like Namor becomes murky because he's the first mutant, but then they're like, no, he's not a mutant anymore. We're not calling that. So we can use him in the MCU and not, Fox doesn't have domain over this character and all this other stuff. It's really murky, but we don't have to worry about that because Disney righted the ship, just like they're going to do with Spider-Man. I'm telling you, Rich, they're going to do the same thing with fucking Spider-Man. They're going to right the ship. No more atrocities. No more fucking Kraven the Hunters. No more fucking Madam Web. No more Venoms, Morbius, all this shit. It's just going to be my man, Spider-Man, battling the Kingpin and teaming up, fighting with the Punisher. Give me all that. Give it to me. As our man Dave Bautista would say, give me what I want.
So Wanda, it was known for a short time, or actually not for a short time, for a long time, as the Great Pretender because of the fact that the High Evolutionary gave her her powers and she pretended to be one of them and then took their powers away. She was then redeemed at the end of the trial of Magneto because it was revealed that they did a spell that essentially allowed the resurrection protocols to be expanded to mutants that had died prior to them being created. And so, long story short, Hickman is a madman and I love him dearly. And she is now known as the Great Redeemer, not Miro. She is the Great. So she is loved and she is accepted in the mutantdom, as WH mentioned. But that's not what we're talking about with this episode. What we're talking about is, for those of you who haven't seen the show like WH, this series kicks off a year after the last episode in the 90s. So Professor X has been shot. He is dead. Rip Charles. In fact, in this episode, we saw the death certificate. Bishop spends several episodes trying to kill Charles in order to bring about the alternate future that would prevent him from living in the hellscape he lived in. Then Cable showed up because Apocalypse showed up. And we got time travel, and it broke the series for about 10 episodes. And then they brought it back together, and during graduation, Charles gets shot. And now we fast forward. Jubilee is a full-time member. Bishop's a full-time member. Jean's very pregnant.
And with Cable.
With Cable, which, if you read the comics, is kind of inaccurate, but we solve that in episode 2. We'll get to that soon.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, yeah.
And so in episode 1, To Me, My X-Men, you get to see the Friends of Humanity. You get to see the Sentinel Tech. And it ends with them having a big slap-down, drag-out fight. The superhero, okay, first of all, I'd be remiss, the fight in the mall and then the club. Cyclops using his concussion beams to slide around the battlefield. Magnificent.
They're at a rave. They're not at a club. They're at a rave.
At a rave. I'm sorry.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Do you ever go to raves?
No.
No. See, I didn't go to raves because, like,
I went to clubs, but I didn't go to raves.
I went to clubs too, you know, during the grunge days. So, you know, if you were like in the clubs in the 90s in Toronto or the Greater Toronto, you might have seen me like enjoying some libations and swaying to the music of like Radiohead and Pearl Jam and Stone Temple Pilots and things like that.
There's just
but never went to a rave. I didn't go to raves. I didn't do that whistle shit or wear fucking flared pants or took ecstasy or that wasn't my scene. No offense if you did that. I just wasn't my scene.
But it was for Roberto.
Oh, yeah.
Roberto decided he wanted to go back. He didn't want to be a part of the gang. You know, as always, the mutant. And he had very pointed. There were several lines throughout all both episodes. Roberto's of, I can't be an X-Men because I can't even, I don't like myself. So how can I be a mutant or be an X-Men? Like, that was sad. And then I'll get to in a minute the Magneto bars. Because Magneto throughout the X-Men series and Wolverine throughout the X-Men series in the first one always had really good lines. For instance, in the original series, Wolverine, when he shows up on the doorstep, doesn't want to be there. He wants to murder Sabretooth when he shows up in the fourth or fifth episode. And Charles is like, no, no, no. We got to help this man. He's a mutant in pain. Sabretooth's a scumbag. Runs off. Magneto shows up. To Me, My X-Men, stomp this mofo out. And Wolverine looks at him, and I'm like, I just think it's funny, Chuck. We got to take it easy on my enemies, and we get to beat up yours. And thus begins the tale of Charles Xavier, hypocrite. You get to this episode. By the end of it, we've discovered that Scott and Jean want to leave the team so that their son could be raised away from the hatred. In fact, Jean had a really sad scene with Aurora Storm where she kind of wishes that her son was born human. And these things are common threads in the X-Men mythos. The X-Men, for better or worse, when people complain that the X-Men are too woke, have always been about being othered and what it feels like. For me as a Black man, for folks in the LGBTQIA community, for anyone that's ever been marginalized, the X-Men were the go-to. And I get why they started overusing them, because that's such a great thing to lean into. But it isn't all, you don't always need the spandex. Sometimes it could just be a good story. And I thought this episode did that. It also did a good job of showing Master Mold and the fear of the Sentinel and reminding people or introducing for folks who had never seen them what the Sentinels look like, especially the relationship between we're humans. We are Homo sapiens superior. You have now created a defense system that kills us on sight. Why is that right? And then, at the very end, we are led into the idea of Magneto with his saucy, cold shoulders being the new, by way of the deed, owner of Xavier's Institute for Gifted Youngsters, and by way of the will and testament of Charles Xavier, the new leader of the X-Men.
And this is straight from the comics.
It is.
In one of the multitude of times that Charles Xavier has been killed in the, nearly 50 years of X-Men publications. He has been killed many, many times. Come back many, many times. Regained the use of his legs. Lost the use of his legs. Regained the use of his legs. It's one of those tropes, Rich, that if I ever wrote comics and I wrote the X-Men, Charles Xavier would not be dead. Or I wouldn't bring him back if the previous writer killed him. I wouldn't bring him back. Charles Xavier would never have the use of his legs. He would always be in the wheelchair. Okay. It's like if I wrote Iron Man, Tony Stark would not lose his company. Tony Stark would not fall back into alcoholism. Okay. If I wrote Captain America, Steve Rogers would never lose the super soldier serum. Captain America would never become old again. You know what I mean? I hate these tropes. But every fifth writer on a fucking character decides to revisit these tropes. Okay, we're gonna disbar Matt Murdock from being a lawyer. I would never do that. Okay, never do that. Anyways, one thing you forgot to mention is that Jubilee does reference a very underrated character created by Brian Michael Bendis and Chris Bacala by the name of Goldballs.
Yeah, I got the
Gold. You got that note?
Because that's also involved in one of the silliest parts of this, which is, I said, Morph playing in our faces. So Morph has the ability to transform into different mutants. As you go through the episode, Morph turns into several people we'd seen and others you might have forgotten from other episodes. Like he's Pyotr Rasputin. He turns into Colossus. He turns into Quanon. Or, Betsy Braddock, if you were in the 90s. Like, how is this buxom Asian woman a British woman? Don't worry about it. We'll explain it later because, X-Men. And you have all the fun Easter eggs like you mentioned. So let's start with that one. Let's talk a little bit about Gold Balls. What are your thoughts?
I just thought it was funny that they referenced one of the lamest characters in an otherwise pretty good run by Michael Bendis. As writer of both Uncanny X-Men and All New X-Men, which I liked more. This is like, that's the good one. That's the one drawn by Stuart Immonen. And it features a time displaced young X-Men to come by the Beast to bring them back to try to stop Cyclops from creating the mutant civil war, blah, 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 and all this stuff. But yeah, his real name, God bless Brian Michael Bendis, Fabio Medina. What a name. Yeah.
And he's now Egg. They changed his name to Egg, so he's no longer.
He's not longer Gold Balls.
No, he's Egg.
What a travesty. Yeah. But anyways, there's that. I figure we're gonna get a lot of these like Easter eggs for diehard X-Men fans like yourself, and more, I suppose, casual fans like myself of the X-Men.
Yes,
but I will say, like, listen, Rich, I collected X-Men straight through from like basically the alien episode of Kitty Pryde in the Mansion Alone up until basically the middle of the Morrison run, because I just had enough of Morrison on that title. I was like, I'm done.
And you look at some, so just to give you a quick one before we talk about the second episode, and then we go to the forum stuff. We had some great reactions from the forum. The newspaper in the first episode that flies across the screen talked about a mutant fashion show, and it had Banshee, Dust, Maggot, and Marrow. And a picture of Spider-Man. Is Spider-Man a mutant? And the Hellfire Gala was another one. So I'm like, they're having some fun.
They're jumping all over different eras. Krakoan era, Morrison era, and Joe Casey, Fabian Nicieza. Joe Kelly wrote that stuff. And Fabian Nicieza, like Morrow and Matt. Oh God, I hate those characters so much.
Yeah, and then, of course, you had the Morph transformations. Episode 1, he turns into Xavier, Jean Grey, and Angel. But He isn't just Warren Worthington III as the little floppy doodah. He is Apocalypse's number one son, Archangel, which 90s, love me some Archangel, love me some Four Horsemen. Woo! Not that.
But this is like, this is not like cool Archangel. This is like, I'm not Archangel anymore. Well, I'm Archangel, but I'm back to my Weepy. Original costume, and I got a blonde mullet.
Yes. So that's the one. It's actually funny because that's the one where it's like the guy where he has the ability to change between the angel and archangel later on, like in the mid 2000s when that happens. And then in the second episode, you are dealt with and introduced to characters that are from the early 90s, like the Executioner. The Executioner originally, again, Executioner's song was Strife, a clone of Nathan Dayspring Ascani's son. In the 2000s, it actually is the person we see here, who is basically a bigot that decides to get some tech. In the X-Men comics, as always, it's going to be alien tech. I don't think it was Shi'ar, but it was something adjacent to it. And I just think the Morph, of course, Lady Deathstrike in episode 2, Colossus, Psylocke, and then at the very end, Sabretooth, which was like him and Wolverine, and that's the thing I think you might have missed too. Him and Wolverine were best friends before he died in the first series. And so seeing these relationships like maintain and rekindle after his resurrection through time travel and all the fun timey-wimey things was really cool. What did
I like, you know, like I popped when I saw Lady Deathstrike. I was like, oh shit, it's Lady Deathstrike. Oh, it's Morph. Never mind.
Yeah, as always, right? I'm getting annoyed by that. I'm like, he's playing. And that's why I keep saying he's playing in my face. Just let me see the people. As you said, be the Bautista. Give me what I want. So in the second episode, Valerie Cooper, we see her for the second time. Valerie Cooper is the liaison between, in the comic books, the United States and X-Factor.
X-Factor.
But because at some point, as WH mentioned, you had the X-Men who were kind of seen as like paramilitary child soldiers, which was always a fair critique. You had X-Factor, which was led by Scott's younger brother and Alex. his and Havoc and company were kind of like the government sanctioned friendly mutants. And Beast was also, again, we don't have time for this because we're at 48 minutes. I thought this was honestly God's honest truth. I thought this was going to be like 37 minutes in and out, including looking at forum. We started talking about the X-Men. I blinked, and it's now 48 minutes. I apologize. I don't apologize. I love it. We're going to just go through this ride together. So anyway, mutant liberation begins. We see the Executioner. We see Val. While the X-Men are fighting the Executioner, and it's the trial of Magneto version 1 with the UN, the Friends of Humanity strike, and we have to deal with that going on while Jean goes into labor. And again, another poignant art and life situation where a doctor is refusing to be part of the birth of a mutant into the world, which is just such a violation of the Hippocratic Oath. Like, it was just so, the Hippocratic Oath was just being spat upon. I was so annoyed. What did you think about that whole scenario?
Well, I don't know why they went to a hospital. Why can't Hank McCoy, you know, can he deliver?
Wasn't he fighting at the time, though? Well, so but I think Cyclops. He's like doctorate, like pretty doctorate, not like an actual doctor.
No, but in the comics, he's a fucking geneticist. Like,
but a geneticist isn't an obstetrician. Like, he's not going to.
Well, this is fucking comic books. They're like everything. Reed Richards can like fucking create a particle accelerator and like create a new milkshake because that's how fucking smart he is. You know what I mean? Tony Stark is a great engineer, but also, you know, he could probably fucking, you know, build like, I don't know, clone himself or some shit.
No one is going to want a geneticist near their hoo-ha when they're having a baby. I'm sorry, WH. I love you, my friend, but that's not going to work.
Listen, Jean Grey loves Hank McCoy. They're best friends. If you can't trust your furry, you know, blue furry friend with, you know, three doctorates and 500 PhDs, like, who can you trust?
Listen, there are so many great quotes in this. I got one. It is human nature to crave connection. It is also mutant nature to be heard, seen, to feel another soul finally seeing yours. Connection is a fragile treasure. Once you sacrifice so much, I really liked the one that Magneto said, which Charles Xavier entrusted me with his dream, and it does not ask you to love or embrace my kind as your own, but merely to accept that it is shared with a common future and that my kind, like yours, have a right to live in it. I am trying to be better. Please do not make me let you down.
Yeah, great line. So really good, strong writing on this show so far in these episodes. So,
yeah. And we end this episode after Magneto's trial ends and he is seen as, you know, he's kind of given a reprieve because he saved the life of everyone who put him on trial. We go back and we figure out that because of whatever the executioner had, Storm is now depowered, which, again, we don't have the time today, but when we talk about episode 3, I assume we're going to get a chance to chat about it a lot. Depowered Aurora Monroe is more dangerous than you could ever imagine. This woman was not just powerful because of her mutant powers. She was one who grew up on the streets of
Cairo,
and she'll cut a fool if she got to.
Punk Rock Storm, depowered Punk Rock Storm, one of my favorite versions of the character, still led the X-Men because mm-hmm. they still respected her so much. They said, well, we want to follow her, so it doesn't matter if she has powers or not. So they lift that whole idea of her being depowered from a storyline involving Rogue, and like the government wants to take away her powers using a thing called the Neutralizer created by Forge, who is actually Storm's ex-lover. I never figured out why he's a mutant. If his ability is to invent things.
I think it's mutant invention ability. Like, I create things.
Yeah. But why isn't Tony Stark a mutant then?
Because plot, WH.
Forge never made sense to be like, I'm a genius inventor. I'm a mutant. So if you didn't have your mutant gene, you'd just be like a mechanic working in a car body shop? What? Yes. I don't get it.
That's what they do.
Like, if they said, like, I, Madison Jeffries from Alpha Flight?
Yes.
Remember that character? That was actually when George was like, he's just a genius, but then he can have the power to, like, make it reality. Like, you know, like, I can see it in my mind. I'm going to just use my, like, kind of telekinetic powers. Like, that's Madison Jeffries. That was great power. Great, great power. Like, that's what they should have made to Forge, you know?
They should have, but alas, they dropped the ball with Forge. I can't lie. Forge is kind of I can't make a plot bomb that makes him work. But what they try to make work is the end of this episode. One of my favorite things. Two things happen. Magneto, with his little sassy cold shoulders that you see here if you're looking, decides he's going to try to remind us that him and Rogue apparently had a relationship prior to back in their days in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And in true good drama fashion, Remy LeBeau, who's been trying to be the sassy man he is, now has to deal with the fact that Rogue may not be his girl anymore.
Well, the thing with Magneto is that he can touch her.
Yep.
Without her absorbing his psyche or his powers and putting him into a coma. So, you know, that's from the comics too. Like
magnets. Magnets.
Okay. By the way, is it Magneto or Magneto?
I say Magneto.
I had a conversation with a friend who said, but it's not magnetism. It's not magnetic.
But his name is Magneto. He right. gave his own name. If he pronounces it, his mama call him Cassius. I'm gonna call him Cassius.
You know, there you go. It's like submariner.
Yeah.
It's submariner. We call him the submariner because it'd be stupid to call him the submariner, even though the root word is submarine.
Right.
But you know, I call him the submariner.
That's like when you look here, you got Morph, you got Gene and Scott with young Nathan. Beast, you got Jubilee, Wolverine, and Morph is holding I'm hoping it's Madeline Pryor. I don't even know why I'm saying I'm hoping it's going to be Madeline Pryor.
It's got to be Madeline Pryor. It's got to be the Goblin Queen. Did they do Inferno in the original run?
Yes.
So she's appeared then. Then Madeline Pryor has already existed in this.
No, in the original series, she has not shown up yet.
Okay, so they didn't do Inferno in the original series.
They did aspects of Inferno. Because they had the Dark Phoenix. But then it got like, just like this, the original series was a hobgob of like everything. So you had the Brood, you had the Shi'ar for a little bit. You had like, I think Storm had already had the knife fight with
Callista,
who we just saw in this one when the Friends of
Humanity. Callista, because she's named after a character from a Shakespearean. Callista, you're talking about Harrison Ford's wife.
Callista Flockhart. Yeah, that was my bad. My brain just, I'm running low. We're almost at the, we're over an hour. All right. So what's going to happen next? We don't know. We're going to enjoy going on it with you. We've given our opinions for far longer than I thought we were.
And so John Cena will be here next week.
Yeah. So now we're going to hop in on forum.postwrestling.com where you can always go for any of our shows. Please feel free to leave feedback both for this episode and future episodes. So we're going to start with Crooked Letter 9, my man Muggin. Marvel Animation knew the assignment. Changed too much and fans were rejected, or changed very little and fans were like, what's different? X-Men 97 effectively strikes a perfect balance of familiar and fresh. The iconic theme song remains intact. The design's got a nice facelift. Storm's mohawk looks that great. And even hearing the previous song on X-Men was dope. The tone remains what was the original great, while being a little more mature without the handcuffs of PG ratings. The voice cast is a good blend of old and new. Jennifer Hale fence Jean Grey like a glove. Hearing Cal Dodd voice Wolvie again felt like old times. Cyclops got treated with great reverence. The shot of Optic blasting his way to safety was ill. In addition, his arc with him and Jean navigating a new normal with Magneto at the helm and becoming parents is a testament to the show's commitment to the interpersonal drama. The deep cuts were delightful with Morph turning into Blob. Ah, forgot about Blob. Psylocke, etc. And the action looks awesome. Simply put, X-Men 97 is a triumphant return for the merry band of mutants. It's like they never left. So I'm going to tag out to you, WH, because my voice is going.
All right.
So I'll zoom these in to make it easier and for ease of listening for our listeners.
So you have to scroll up when I tell you to, because I don't have access. I'm doing this on my tablet. That's okay. And believe it or not, my tablet has a way better camera than the one I bought several years ago. Anyways, it's been a while, fellas. Oh, I've been listening, but frankly, the output from the MCU hasn't stirred me into throwing my two cents in. My two cents in until this day. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. The X-Men have returned back to the format in which I was originally acquainted with, and they have been given the financial and creative backing to not only meet expectations from diehards, but excel beyond with delivering incredible action sequences, genuinely complex storytelling, and nods to X-Men lore that will help reintroduce the X-Men to a generation that's probably grown up with the films and later works. It's definitely a return to form for the voice actors. Cal Dodd's Wolverine still resonates as the voice of Wolverine. George Buzza still delivers his lines wonderfully as Hank McCoy. Newcomers for Cyclops and Jean Grey fit the team very well. And what a setup for Storm. We must praise her, Miss Allison Seeley Smith, for the incredible performance in these first two episodes. I look forward to seeing her journey of healing. Although the destinations are unknown, they should be rife with plenty of callbacks to earlier X-Men comics. Maybe it's Harlem. Maybe Egypt. Maybe somewhere new. Who will she find along the way? I love this because it's only going to strengthen her and build her for return to ultimately lead the team. The action felt like the original series, but with the gloves off. It avoids being overkill while being a visual spectacular that pulls the heartstrings of your fandom, now unhindered by budget constraints. They landed the action mark with perfection. And it's not just the action, but the dialogue accompanied by the updated animation and subtle expressions, accompanied by dialogue that is neither dumbed down nor deviating from character, but mature and genuine to each individual character as they were and as they are now. Changes certainly here for our team, and that drama will dictate their course accordingly. Love this! I remember talking with Larry Houston, who helped bring X-Men to Fox and was also involved with Pride of the X-Men, going back to the fiduciary limitations that stifle production of the series. And I can see his excitement at a local convention when he mentioned he was brought on as consulting director, and smiling, saying basically that they're working with Disney money now and we are going to really like what comes out of it. I'm happy to say for musician, for Marvel Disney, for the entire cast and crew, that they have a hit on their hands. Okay, one last thing. My first X-Men comic ever purchase was Uncanny X-Men Annual 17. It was in that annual that I first introduced to Executioner, who started climbing off with a vigilante vibe in the early pages, but ultimately was out to eradicate mutants. And I remember very clearly that it was Storm that put the dude out of action in that first meeting, not before he did some major damage to Colossus. I love that annual for many reasons, but it being my first jump from the animated show to the comic book is the prime reason. And this particular comic book, I do believe, came with a trading card, did it not?
Yeah, I think it would have been right next to the Comic Code Authority. It was like bagged and tagged in that corner.
A card of the Executioner. So here we see the great cover drawn by the late Jason Pearson, who I loved his work on various annuals he did. His work on the Legion of Superheroes, 5 years later era. His own work in Body Bags. Wonderful artist. He passed away several years ago, much to my sadness to say that. Great art. Great art. Well, it took 30 years, but it seems Executioner has, by sorry luck, got the receipt on Ro in episode 2. It was just so coincidental for me that I had to share the significance of that. You know that payback is going to be incredible. What a wonderful time to be an X-Men fan. Excelsior! Am I still doing these, Rich?
Yep. I'm going to tag out to you so my voice
is right. Manny from Pacoima. Postmarks and freeloaders, put on your pajamas and a bowl of Captain Crunch berries because Saturday morning cartoons are back. As someone who watched the show as a little child but didn't remember majority of it, I have to say that this show does a good job, not only being continuation but also feeling like its own thing. It's great to see Gambit once again, but why is my dude getting cheated on? This man has passion, drive, but no patience. You don't need the Rogue, my king. I'm looking forward to what the rest of the series brings. I consider Wolverine and the X-Men as my favorite series, but these first two episodes definitely deliver. Wait, if you don't want Gambit with Rogue, who do you want him with? There's not that much out there.
Belladonna?
Okay? No, like on the team right now.
No, I mean, like, you want to go with like the ghost demon lady that was his first wife? Like, nobody wants Belladonna.
Who do you, didn't he hook up with Psylocke? At some point,
he hooked up with everybody. He was a man who.
Anyways, there you go. Anyone else?
And you know this one's coming. Here, get ready.
All right, it's your boy. It's a Nate's boy, Jermaine, DC Jermaine from Chicago, whose ever idea was this to bring back all the props. Quick story: my first interaction with X-Men became my favorite X-Men. Bobby Drake on Spider-Man and his amazing friends. Bobby is an Omega level mutant. We talked about this, yeah. So same power levels as Storm, Magneto, and a Franklin Richards. Everybody loves Spider-Man, but Robert was my guy. By the way, Marvel never uses Firestar anymore, but for X-Men and the Capcom fighting games, it has my love for the X-Men. This series is hitting all the right notes. Even Jubilee looking more Asian in this updated version, that's important. X-Men has always been about diversity with a Storm and Kitty Pryde. Diversity is for everyone. See what I did? No, I don't see what you did. But anyways, the series made Cyclops look like a real leader instead of a lovesick whip punk. It's giving me all the feels of the original. I love the scene from the original where Juggernaut hits Gladiator with his full power and Gladiator no-sells it and throws him in the middle of the ocean. Did you know that he's referencing Gladiator, and who's a member of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard. Did you know that the Imperial Guard are all based on the Legion of Superheroes?
I did not. Holy crap.
If you go look back at it, like the Dave Cockrum era, the Jim Shooter Dave Cockrum era of the Legion of Superheroes, that's so Dave Cockrum was also the artist of the X-Men and helped create the Imperial Guard. They're all based on Legion of Superheroes characters. So like Gladiator is Superman or Superboy.
That's hilarious.
Right. Anyways, Disney, even though I wish Fox would have sold to Apple. Why, Jermaine? Why do you gotta throw in some nonsense?
Too much on its place.
Why do you just throw nonsense there? I thought we're gonna throw in some nonsense into otherwise great feedback. But anyways, because Diddy has too much on his plate, fuck off. Come on, really? Blade and Fantastic Four hasn't come out. X-Men movies are a rumor, but Disney, you did good. The theme of the show still hits 25 years later. This is the X-Men I want to see. Superman and Deadpool will be the cure for this fatigue.
He's saying Superman because of course.
Superman's original superhero. How's that going to save you from fatigue? By your savior, James Gunn? Come on, dude.
James Gunn is going to save everyone with the eighth version of Superman.
We'll see. We'll see if, like, I'm sure it'll do well. I don't think it's going to jumpstart this fucking DCEU bullshit that's never going to happen. Because DC go to DC, Warner Brothers going to Warner Brother. Okay, Anthony, as a fan of the original run over 32 years ago, wow. I'm locking in the moment 97 was announced. It was a continuation of season 5 with all the cheesy lines, Jim Lee, blue and gold attire that I enjoyed like it was 1992 all over again. The series was fantastic. Near flawless. But they did Storm dirty, and that don't sit well for me. After making her feel like an actual forest, to see her go out like that? Listen, dude, you ever read the comics? This is lifted from the comics. Storm will come back, probably stronger than a level.
And for those of you who aren't watching on YouTube, Anthony has shared a GIF where there's a horse that says, "No, sir, I don't like it."
Don't worry, you're going to change that GIF. Nine. What are goblins? What are we talking about goblins for? What the fuck is this? Like, we don't use that kind of scale on MCU later. 9 goblins out of 10. Loss of fun because they did Storm dirty at the end. Don't worry, Anthony. Chill out, man. But I know why.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I know why, and the story they're going for, but it still stings. Listen, just chill out, bro. Just chill out, my friend. You know what? Chill out. Go to chop-tees.com. You know what you need? You know to need to chill out. MC later. T-shirt, hoodie. Damn. Get the zip hoodie. I gotta get me one of those soon, Rich.
Yeah.
Sweet.
We gotta get them to get us a
represent. Take a picture. We gotta get
us a picture of like a X-Men 97 themed MC later with the two of us.
Anthony, Manny from Kakoya, fucking Jermaine, fucking Muggin. Get down and chop these. Take those pictures. Share them on the forums, and we'll put them up on the fucking screen here on the YouTube gimmick.
Yeah, listen, John Cena can't show up next week bragging about his show being on Dynamite, and we don't have like an MCU later T-shirt or some sort of apparel at a comic book convention somewhere.
Listen, I am working towards getting our merch on an actual member of the MCU. I can't say anything more than that. It is not a done deal, but I've got a plan, and hopefully it comes to fruition. And the fuck, we're gonna fucking chop tease is gonna be the Tony Khan. You know what I'm saying? Hey, yeah, all that money.
I like it. I like what we did today. But before we get out of here,
sorry.
Recommendations.
All right. The Age of Apocalypse complete collection is out there. Rich will have like the link for it in the description for this episode. But if you want to see more Morph, really, Morph at his peak, it doesn't get better than that or Exiles. But we'll go with Age of Apocalypse because that's also Rogue, Magneto get together. You know, you get to see Apocalypse like taking over the Earth and shit. You see the team of Wolverine and Jean Grey as Weapon X. Wolverine with one hand cut off. What the fuck? Cyclops, a member of the fucking Apocalypse Horseman and shit with his brother Havoc. Some good shit. I like Age of Apocalypse. One of my favorite series.
And do you have anything else or is that it?
That's it. You know what? We just can't be like throwing everything up against the window to see what sticks there, Rich. Maybe we're going to tell John Cena he has to bring a recommendation for himself next week.
And so, as always, thank you guys for listening. If you want to hear more of us, We promise we're not as wild. We're sometimes wilder. We didn't mention our fake sponsor that eventually will be our real sponsor, because until they pay up, sometimes you're not going to see the crisp taste of.
You mean this?
Oh, there it is. We're not going to mention audio wise until they start paying up. We might not mention it all the time. We might just put it on video and say, hey, you give it to us, just like this episode. It's free. You want to hear about the rest of the series? You got to pay up.
That's right. Pay up. Pam, you want to hear about the X-Men? I think one of those episodes when we cover the X-Men movies will be a free episode. What, at least one of them will be.
Apocalypse, just so I can have people hear my rage at re-seeing that freaking movie, because Warren Worthington III is Archangel and he's in a plane and he dies in a plane because you can't have a guy that flies not get out of the plane. Nope, not doing it.
We'll discuss it with the head honcho waiting about which episode will be free. Maybe he's listening to this. He's like, okay, it's going to be the Apocalypse episode. But there you go.
Well, that is that for this episode. As always, thank you for listening to MCU Later. And until next time,
We will all see you behind the paywall. MCU Later.